Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascists.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Oh, ho, ho, ho. It is 2020? It's 2020.
It is 2020. And
wow.
The Astros have some very clear vision of the future. I don't know. Do they?
I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. We got a lot to talk about.
We do. We do. But at first, I'd like to start out with a little bit of good news.
We're all alive, and it is 2020, and yeah. Baseball.
Yeah. Well, the good news being
we're back.
Oh. Third season of this West Coast Bias baseball podcast, and we are less than a month away from pitchers and catchers reporting.
Ooh, that is
for
right.
Spring training.
That is true. That is very true. I'm excited. I mean, there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to be
concerned about
possibly if you were one of three teams, but we do know that the Giants and the Dodgers are the Dodgers are looking good. I don't know about the Giants are making some moves, though.
They're making moving the needle too much, except they did make a historic hire.
Really
yes. They have officially hired the first woman to a full-time coaching position in Major League Baseball.
You guys got a new female manager. She's going to be managing the team.
She's not going to be managing the team. She's going to be a coach, I think an assistant hitting coach, if I'm not mistaken.
Hitting coach.
Allison Nacken. She played for Sacramento State University softball. By all accounts, a good hitter, high average, and good fielder to boot.
So what was she in the running for a long time? Is this
she's been an intern with the Giants since 2014. So she's been with the club, just not as necessarily a on the field coach. Now it's unlikely she will be in uniform during games. The Giants have now 14 coaches total, including Gabe Kapler, and only 7 are allowed in uniform in the dugout.
Right, so she's not going to be wearing a uniform.
She's not going to be wearing a uniform, but she is a full-time coach on the coaching staff.
They also hired another assistant coach, didn't they, along with her on the same day?
They did.
Mark Halberg. Yeah.
Was also, a minor league player, was decent, but...
Yeah, and he's 34 years old. I mean, and so he's a young guy, and he played with Buster Posey.
He did play with Buster Posey.
Florida State.
Yeah. So there's a connection to the current team there.
Ninth round draft pick of the Diamondbacks in 2007. Obviously, his career and Buster's took drastically different directions.
But
old friends, old pals. Is that gonna spark up Old man Posey now, or
I don't know. It's certainly possible. I don't know. That remains to be seen how well the Giants will perform on the field with their new coaching staff. But looking like a fresh new start. They also added a left-handed pitcher, Drew Smyly.
Really. You know, so, I took a gamble on Drew Smyly a couple of years back when he was still with Tampa, because you know he had decent peripherals and he had good, like a good FIP. This is like, man, this is like 2016 maybe, but yeah. Well, I took a chance and he burned me, and I still remember that. I mean, literally 3 years ago.
He was one of the top pitchers in 2014.
Man, he's got the spin rate.
Already been there.
I always just figured he needed a good team. Now it's too well, bad he's going to play with the Jets.
Well, yeah. but he is going to a pitcher's park with altered dimensions.
Sort of. So yeah, exactly. It's not really a pitcher's park anymore.
It'll play similarly, except that some of those deep fly balls to center field will actually go out.
They'll be home runs.
Being caught on the warning track.
And it's not getting any colder. It's getting warmer and warmer, it seems like, each year here in San Francisco. So the balls are just going to be flying. It'll be really interesting to see at the end of 2020 where the ballpark stands in terms of hitters and pitcher friendly.
I think it'll still be a very fair leaning towards the pitchers.
I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if it's somewhere toward the middle. I don't know. Maybe not. I mean, of course, we'll see the baseball prospectus 2021. Because, of course, they lay out every single park and all the park factors and all that. It's great. It's yeah. my favorite day when that, one of my favorite days.
When it arrives at your
door. It's coming. It's not going to come for a little while. It comes in February. But, get yours pre-ordered. And you know what, Baseball Prospectus, why don't you just start sponsoring this show, will you? We've been talking about you guys forever. I can't really say your name properly, but I read you thoroughly.
We can definitely learn if you sponsor us.
Speaking of learning, the Dodgers apparently learned a little bit from their previous arbitration deals, and they rewarded Cody Bellinger for his 2019 MVP campaign.
He deserves it.
Yeah, for $11.5 million salary. Record for a player in his first year of arbitration eligibility. He broke the previous first-year arbitration eligible record set by, do you know who?
No.
Chris Bryant. Who's currently still embattled in the lawsuit, or it wasn't a lawsuit, I don't know, arbitration. That was $10.85 million in 2018. It's pretty crazy because the Dodgers renewed Bellinger's salary in 2019 at $605,000, you know, which, I mean, again, for you or me, that sounds pretty good, but for the MVP, MVP will get paid $600K, it's pretty good. They also confirmed settlements, the Dodgers, that is, with Corey Seager at $7.6 million, Kike at $5.9 million, Ross Stripling at $2.1 million, and Julio Urias.
Well, it looks like the band's coming back then, huh?
Yeah, but, the Dodgers are going to go to their first arbitration hearing since 07, because unfortunately, Jock Peterson, Pedro Baez, Max Muncy, and Chris Taylor remain unsigned. So it's a little bit of a bad news. I'm sure they'll get it all figured out. I mean, I don't think any of those guys want to go play anywhere else. You know, the Dodgers are already Fangraphs projected to win 101 games. Of course, win the West again. Maybe not by 20 games, but maybe. I mean, especially if Arenado leaves Colorado, I don't think that's going to happen. But Jock Peterson wanted $9.5 million. Dodgers countered with $7.75 million, which I mean, you know, $9.5 million, Jock. I mean. You know, I mean, I love you, buddy, but, you know, come on. Chris Taylor filed at $5.8 million. The club offered $5.25 million. And Muncy, you know, Muncy's, he's only asking for $4.67 million. Hey, that sounds pretty good. The club countered with $4 million. I mean, usually they meet him before they have to get to arbitration. But, looks like since the inception of salary arbitration 44 years ago, the Dodgers are 14-6. In cases decided by a hearing, and 6-1 since 1991, which includes the most recent via Joe Bimel in 07. Remember Bimel?
I don't remember Bimel. Oh. That name does not ring familiar.
You don't remember Joe Bimel?
No.
Come on. Are you serious? Really? I don't. Yeah. He was a Red Sox for a while, wasn't he? Or am I thinking of... Anyway, I saw Bimel at a hotel one time.
Okay. Well, that might be why he stands out to you.
He's a Dodger. He was good, man. Bimel had his moments.
I imagine he did. It doesn't spark any sort of memory to me in my Giants Dodgers experience.
How do you sleep at night?
Sometimes better than others, but.
The last player to win a hearing against the Dodgers was Terry Adams in 01. And the Dodgers' first arbitration case, just for a little history, 1975. Ron Say got $56,000 instead of $47,000. It's crazy, man. It doesn't even seem like it's that long ago, 1975, and just talking about the figures and how different they are.
It's been a crazy fast rise in
It's pretty
numbers.
Insane. I mean, Jock Peterson asking for 9. I mean, the Dodgers offered him 7-7. Like, by all rights, Max Muncy is better than Jock Peterson. I hate to admit it. Jock Peterson is a great outfielder. He's a great hitter, but
he's also a lot younger than Muncy.
He's not a great hitter yet. He has the potential. Yeah, that's true. But Muncy's versatile, man. Muncy can play third on a dime. He can play first, obviously. Throw him in the outfield if we need him, you know. I don't know. So hopefully we'll be seeing some help there. You know, Dodgers, all the boys coming back? No? No? Maybe? Hoo-ah! Hopefully. Giants didn't get anybody else?
They did. I've been so distracted by everything else that's been happening.
And, oh, well, yeah.
There's also been, in comparison with the season that we just saw in baseball, the NFL team locally here has been pretty exciting to watch.
The Raiders? No, the Raiders are out, unfortunately.
No, they're no longer a local team either.
Oh, well, neither the 49ers, so I don't know what you're talking
More local than the Raiders. Thank you very much. But
this is not a football
This is not
show.
A football, which is, but I have been distracted by some football. So I may have missed some of the Giants signings. It really seemed to move the needle very much either way. They're just collecting players to see what...
This is the time of the year. I couldn't care less about football. But movies. What's before we just dive right into what you all know. I mean, what everybody's been talking about. What we're champing at the bit for. What was the best movie you saw all year?
Well, you know, I didn't see very many movies this year.
You're out of here.
Nature of my job make it difficult to go see movies, but
how does that work?
I work.
You work nights.
I work nights.
Yeah, you got all day.
So
you got all day.
Well,
you only do this show once in a while. All right,
do this show once in a while.
Once Baseball Prospectus starts sponsoring us, we can afford to do it every day. So write your congressman and or your local Baseball Prospectus.
Right.
Writer.
Sierra Nevada. I want to say writer again. Sierra Nevada, too.
So you didn't see any movies?
I didn't say I didn't see any movies. I saw very few movies. This year, in the theater, I may have seen maybe one or two. And the one that was most recent was Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker. So that's my answer. So... sorry if that disappoints anyone.
That's the best movie. I said, "What's the best movie of the year?" What's the most recent movie?
Oh, so. the most recent. Well, but the best movie that I saw this year in the theater, that would be it. So
ouch.
I don't get out.
Wow.
The best movie overall that I watched, like on TV or on DVD or Netflix
Last
or whatever was that movie Snowpiercer.
That was
a good
movie. But you
didn't
see Parasite? It's the same director.
I did not see Parasite. I didn't get out to the movies. It's not a movie podcast anyway. What's your point? Where are you going with this segment?
I'm just trying to kill some time before we just dive right into this. Anyway. No, okay, so obviously Once Upon a Time in Hollywood was easily top three. I mean,
I've heard great things about it.
I could have watched 3 more hours of that movie. The movie was incredible. But I think one movie that should have been on there, that should have been on some radars, that should have got some credit, was Midsommar. You didn't see this movie.
I did not see this movie.
Oh, my God. Dude, it's got to be the movie afterwards. I'm just like, what? Like, what the hell? What just happened? One of the most incredible experiences I've had watching a movie, 2019, I guess, whatever, you know, it still technically counts this year, but that was it. Go watch that movie. It's not getting any press. Right. It's not getting nominated for anything.
Midsommar. What is it about? Short synopsis?
I literally couldn't. I mean, I'm just going to say modern world meets ancient world. That's it. That's all you got. I don't even know what to tell you. Just go watch that movie. And one of the best psychedelic trip sequences. No, probably the best I've ever seen in my life. Right. It's so hard to capture that on film. Okay, all right. We're rambling on and on. That brings us to a new segment.
For a new year.
Yeah, for a new year. It's called the What's in the Box?
What's in the Box?
What's in the Box? What's in the Box?
Sorry, I love me some Brad Pitt.
What's in the box?
Anyway. All right, what's in the box?
This is not Schrodinger's
What's in the box? Okay. I got three clues.
Three clues.
It's big, but comes in a small package. Number two. It has recently been used as a scapegoat. Number three. Its press agent is Scott Boras.
Baseball related, I imagine.
We're going to get sued for that. That just cost me $500,000 playing that clip. Yeah, of course it's baseball related.
Well, good. I hope so.
What's in the box?
Big, but comes in a small package.
It's big, but comes in a small package. It has been recently used as a scapegoat.
Recently used as a scapegoat.
And its press agent is Scott Boras.
The press agent is, is Scott Boras.
Spokesperson. Yeah, whatever you want to call it. All right. No, that's it.
Yeah, you got me. I have no idea where you're going with this.
That would be Jose horrible. Altuve's modesty.
Jose.
So- ding, ding, ding.
Shame. Shame.
Jose Altuve.
Oh, no.
After he hits the pennant winning curveball over or into the Crawford boxes off of one Aroldis Chapman. And Chapman looks at him like, are you serious? Like, okay. Like, it's like that. It's not even a smile. Everybody calls it a smile. It's more it's of just
more of a smirk.
It's just pure incredulity. Yeah. More of a smirk. Like, you son of a bitch. And you, you know. And now maybe it wasn't the best pitch ever, but when a guy throws 103 and then, you know, anyway, of course, everybody's seen this clip, right? This clip has been circulated constantly the last couple of days. Altuve's running around third. Everybody's waiting for him at home plate. And he's holding onto his shirt, right? Don't rip my jersey. Don't rip off my jersey, right? Why? Why Altuve? Oh, and then they ask him afterwards. Oh, it's because I'm shy. It's because my wife.
Yeah.
My wife. I got in trouble with my wife. No, I'm no. Okay. Now look, this is where there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe it's just smoke. I don't know. Maybe it's a coincidence. Mm. You know, I don't know. It seems like everybody. It seems like this, especially, you just, okay, if it was just like a Tuesday game and you hit a walk-off, all right, fine. Even then, though, guys are going to go crazy, right? You just won the pennant, bro. Like, you're telling guys, just be dainty with my shirt right now? Now, if you're talking about, like, maybe, and at the time, I remember Joe Buck even was, like, commenting on it. That's kind of funny. I guess we all just sort of assume, oh, maybe he wants to frame it one day. You know, maybe he wants
to go to the Hall of Fame and be
now,
in the wall
not
and...
unlike Kurt Cobain's guitars that are through rock and roll museums all over the country, it and Jimi Hendrix as well. It kind of looks better when it's all ripped apart and broken and shattered and tattered, right? Like, could you imagine? Like, yeah, you showing your kids, this was the pitch, this was the shirt I was wearing when I won the pennant against our bitter rival Yankees, against one of the hardest throwing pitchers of all time, right? Wouldn't that be just as cool? No, I want to preserve the integrity. No, and then afterwards, you know, of course he laughs, repeats the question, classic liar technique right there, right? You're interrogating somebody. What do they do when they're lying? They repeat the question. They say what? Maybe they laugh a little bit. Watch that interview. It's exactly what he does.
Okay.
Anyway, it's despicable. It And again,
so what was he covering up?
The electronic device.
The electronic device?
Under his shirt.
There's an electronic device under his shirt.
Now, again, according to the Manfred 9-page report, there was not enough evidence to substantiate any of these pulsing devices or bandages that, you know, blah, 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 all that stuff.
Some sort of electrode,
but
like an electronic stimulus massage thing.
Call it a modern-day Morse code, I don't know, telegraph thing. I don't know, man. I don't know what the hell these things are. This isn't my job. But there's a lot of reports about all this. And then when you go back and you watch that, you wonder, huh, that's a little strange. That's a little weird, right? I mean, it's not like Altuve is naked under there. I mean, all these guys wear undershirts. It's not like he's got like a horrible body. And he's, and by the way, since then people have been showing all these stills and videos from when they did rip his shirt off multiple times and he had no problem with it, right? So I don't know. Anyway, that's just the segue into the shitstorm that is the Astros and of course the Red Sox and now even the Mets in turn.
Yes.
Man, you know, did you read the report?
I did not get all the way through it. No.
Okay, this is a direct quote from the report. Notwithstanding the publicity surrounding the Red Sox incident and the September 15th memorandum that I sent, Manfred, to all clubs, the Astros continued to both utilize the replay review room and the monitor located next to the dugout to decode signs for the remainder of the regular season and throughout the postseason. I mean, that is just clear as day. You know, continued. The efforts involving the replay review room staff were mentioned in at least two emails sent to Lunau, and there is conflicting evidence about conversations with Lunau on the topic. Regardless of the level of Lunau's actual knowledge, the Astros' violations of rules in 2017 and 2018 is attributable, in my view, to a failure by the leaders of the baseball operations department and the field managers to adequately manage the employees under their supervision, to establish a culture in which adherence to the rules is ingrained in the fabric of the organization and to stop bad behavior as soon as it occurred. This is why the management gets all the blame for it, of course, right? I mean, because it is their job.
Yeah, absolutely.
The players, obviously, they all did it, you know?
Yeah, even if they didn't directly participate, they all were part of it.
Yeah, there was he even details in the report that the several players told investigators that there was a sense of panic in the Astros dugout after the White Sox pitcher Danny Farquhar appeared to notice the trash can bags, the infamous game, right? Before the game ended, a group of Astros players removed the monitor from the wall in the tunnel and hid it in an office. For the postseason, a portable monitor was set up on a table to replace the monitor that had been affixed to the wall near the dugout. So there, you know, obviously there were reports at first like, okay, yeah, they did it during the 2017 season, but there's no way they did it in the postseason.
No, they most definitely did. And in articles that I have found dating back 2018, the Dodgers were among at least four other teams that were onto the Astros somehow stealing signs.
Well, we talked about last week, that Alex Wood in Game 4. He had suspicions, and he went in, and him and Barnes switched the signs every six pitches, and he won that game.
Right.
And we lost every other game there, because I don't know if we had enough, if the Dodgers had enough cause for concern, you know, whether at that point it was maybe just rumors and maybe not everybody wanted to believe, like Kershaw coming in with like a 6-run lead and then getting shelled. I mean.
Yeah, it's very un-Clayton-like even in the postseason.
People talk about Game 7, and yeah, we lost Game 7 at home, but we should not have lost Game 5. Game 5 was a done deal. The Astros just always had a hit at the most opportune time. There was like four or five times where that happened. We were just like, what the hell is going on here? How are we losing this game? So it never should have even gone 7 games. So that argument is bullshit. Sorry, I'm getting a little upset here. But you got to love this old A.J. Hinch press conference.
This was right after which game
was it?
Was
during
this?
The ALCS.
It was during the ALCS. Yeah. Okay.
Man, I'm glad you asked that question. And I thought it would come up today. In reality, it's a joke. But so many people around that are doing this. And then, you know, when I get contacted about some questions about whistling, it made me laugh. It made me laugh. It made me laugh. You know, nobody heard it. You guys have audio, video, people in places, and nothing, and there's no evidence of anything. There's no evidence. There's no evidence. You know, my face, my name is by my quotes, my opinions, my reaction is all for you guys to tweet out and put on the broadcast. But when we have people that are unnamed, or you guys have sources that are giving you information, I suggest they put their name by it if they're so passionate about it to comment about my team or my players. They'll be the last question I answer about pitch tipping or pitch stealing.
Insert Mike Fires here.
Yeah, exactly. Someone did put their name by it.
Yeah. Careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Just might get it. Wow.
A member of that team in question.
Ago, yeah.
And in 2018, the Oakland A's did report suspicions of the Astros stealing signs to Major League Baseball, and nothing happened.
Probably courtesy of Mike Fiers, because he was playing with the A's then.
I would imagine that, it was Mike Fiers who went to the A's and said, hey, something hinky is going on in Houston, and this is what they're doing. I don't know what, he might have said to the A's. I don't know what the A's might have said to the league, but the result was they were allowed to continue another year.
Of course. I'm not surprised about that. You know, MLB wants to keep it under the rug. They don't want to have everybody listen to it, everybody have put their own opinions in when there's no real evidence.
So could they have gone in and the league gone in at that point
and done what John Boy did in 30 minutes? Yeah, I would hope so. Unless they're all just too old and
I'm not even talking about the internet. I'm not even talking about on a public scale like John Boy. I'm talking about just internally.
Gone
and said, stop doing it.
Well, what they could have done was done their own research. They could have found that clip, maybe. Let's just say, I mean, of course, this is before the Evan Drellich and Ken Rosenthal actual thing came out, right? Which
right, then but that only happened after
right, yeah.
Fires came yeah. forward.
So okay, so but this is a good example of you see Jessica Mendoza, this ESPN analyst, and she's like a consultant for the Mets. She came out, this is a few days ago, and was essentially said, that the way Fires went about it was wrong, and he deserves fallout for this and backlash, and essentially should be blackballed. And if he is, then that's tough kind of thing, because he didn't go through the proper channels, and that he went about it the wrong way. Well, did he go about it the wrong way? Now, of course, she's since backtracked all those statements because she sounds ridiculous. Yeah, Fires went to the A's. He went go through the proper channels when he's on the 2017 Astros. Yeah, he's going to go to AJ Hinch. What's going on here? Yeah, well, like he's going to do anything. He didn't do anything.
So there was a report.
What are you supposed to do?
There was a report that Hinch was uncomfortable with it and had destroyed
he tried to destroy him, supposedly. Whatever the hell that. I mean, come on, man. Are you that spineless? Like, you are the manager of this team. I'm glad you brought that up, because Terry Francona was just on Rich Eisen's show or something, and they asked him point blank, first of all, have you ever seen any of this? Have you ever done it? And he said, I swear on my soul, I've never seen anybody do this, and if I had, I would have shut it down immediately. I mean, that's Tito. Like, you don't mess around with him, and he can lay down the law. I didn't think AJ Hinch was that much of a spineless wet blanket. I didn't think he was just getting walked all over like that. Like, I could see how maybe he would want that to come out in the report. Like, I tried. I was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I think it makes him look worse, honestly. It's like, just double down, bro. Like, this is you. This is all on you. You and Cora and Beltran and Lou now, of course. But it's like, what are you doing here? Like, why even lie about that? Even if it's not a lie, it makes you look even worse.
It really does.
Hey, that really sucks.
Sorry, but I mean, come on. Ridiculous. Oh, I tried. I didn't like it. I was uncomfortable.
I broke a couple monitors to try to give a hint that I didn't want it to happen. But
I really like, and because again, like, it's hard for somebody to put their name on it, and Mike Fiers may get some backlash, may get blackballed. I mean, the guy's a journeyman. He's had a great career. He's fine. I'm not worried about him, and I don't think he will, because again, like, most teams out there and most managers out there, if not all of them, aren't okay with any of this stuff.
Right, and a lot of players have started to come forward expressing their disgust with the Astros and the whole situation.
Which is great, because that was the one thing that I kept hearing on the talking heads on you know, MLB or ESPN. It's
about the players. All the players did this, and they were fine with it. And
or that they were saying only retired players are coming out and talking about.
No,
this.
Not
why
so.
Aren't the why aren't the current players talking about? It? Well, the current players are talking about it.
Bellinger said something, and there was another.
Mike Clevenger went Mike off, Clevenger, and this is some of the best stuff I've heard. This is Clevenger on the Momentum Network on YouTube. It's really good.
Don't get me wrong. That lineup, that's another part that pisses me off. That lineup's talented enough that I think if they just had the due diligence to do the regular baseball shit, pick when I'm tipping, whatever, they'd do damage. You have buddies that if they knew what was coming would be perennial all-stars in the big leagues, dude. There's a lot more that the public doesn't see because you don't see the money being placed. You don't see guys going up and down. So you're not seeing those guys literally working their ass off to finally get a glimpse that literally living off their parent, like taking two different jobs in the off-season, not even being able to have to lift at 2 a.m., bro. I've been there. I've had to do that. I've had to live with my mom so I got to the big leagues. And now you're telling me that someone could have potentially shorted my career or sent me back down, made me figure shit out because they knew what I was throwing when I was in their park. So many guys are only there trying to figure out how can I stay here? What will make me stay here? But to each their own. But I'm not going to sit here and just be quiet about with like someone blatantly taking millions of dollars and, you know, food off my table, let alone other people's table. I don't think any of those motherfuckers should be able to look us in the eye. They should feel ashamed. You want to protect the guy next to you, you want to protect the sanctity of baseball. It's not giving $5 million, you know, discipline to a billion-dollar corporation. And while they're still walking around with the same ring on their finger in the same uniform, in the same city, in the same contract.
Yeah, tell them, Clev. Yeah, dude. Yeah. That's great. They should be ashamed. Yeah,
they really should. I think if there's no direct punishment levied on the players of the 2017, 2018, possibly 2019 Astros, there should be maybe some indirect punishment. Right. I would not be surprised to see Houston players and former Houston players get thrown at.
Bregman's gonna take he's gonna get more bean balls than Rizzo this year.
I would not be surprised to see as some of these players as their contracts start to expire not be able to get a new contract, or if they do, it'll be at a significantly reduced amount than what their numbers would ultimately dictate.
I mean, you're talking about performance ability, sure, but you're also talking about character or lack thereof, and that could be a clubhouse cancer. You know,
it could be the amount of distrust and disdain that these players have now earned themselves. That's going to be really, really tough to earn back, and they may be de facto out of baseball, if not, you know, if they haven't been outright punished by Major League Baseball, they will end up on a list.
What do you think? I mean, do you think these punishments are severe? Because I don't think they're severe at all.
Yes and no. I think that
1 year suspension for Luna, 1 year suspension for Hinch, $5 million fine, 2 years of first and second round draft picks taken. That's it.
Well, I think
$5 million to a billionaire.
I think the fine is not enough, but that is the maximum that was allowed.
Right, that needs to be changed before this offseason.
So
I mean, before this season starts. That's hopefully one good thing that can come out of this.
I think that the draft picks will ultimately hurt the team.
Maybe 8-9 years from now, but their team is young right now. They're stocked, like they're fine right now. You know,
and,
yeah, maybe 2025, 2026.
I think that the suspensions of Ludau and Hinch are a start. I think it helps that the team did ultimately dismiss them. I think
does it though?
It doesn't punish the team, but it does punish those two individuals.
Okay. Hinch and Luhnow's exact salaries aren't known, right. But low estimates have Hinch at around $3 to $5 million, Luhnow at around at least 4 to 6. Okay. Right. Now all of a sudden you don't have to pay these guys. And the guys that you're gonna replace him are gonna get way, way lower in salary. So if anything, Crane's looking at this like, oh, I think I just made money here. I don't have to pay these guys $10 million. You're gonna fine me $5 million?
Okay.
That's not too bad. I can handle that. What? I think he's actually sitting pretty.
Well, I think the owner is fine, but the owner wasn't really held accountable to the operations.
He's held accountable $5 million worth. Yeah,
$5 million, which is chump change. I totally agree. It does not go far enough to hurt his overall pocketbook. But if he truly was unaware of the cheating that was happening, and his reaction of
I don't care,
if
you own a building and somebody pours cement into your bathtub drain, you still have to pay for that. That's on you. It doesn't matter if you knew about it or not. You own the building. You know, you hire the tenants, you vet the tenants before they come in, and you put your trust in them. And if they screw you over, you get screwed over. $5 million, Cano gets popped for PEDs, misses a whole season, loses $16 million.
No, I think
individual players can get way harsher punishments than entire organizations. That's ridiculous. That is completely beyond the pale of anything reasonable, in my opinion. Now, I wanted a lifetime ban for Cora and Hinch.
Right, but they may get blackballed and not be allowed in the club.
You know, this country, we have a very short memory.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if within 2 years' time, they both, maybe not Cora, but Hinch. Yeah, I mean, he'll go back to the minor leagues. He'll manage down there. He's still a former MLB coach. He's still a World Series managing champion, right? He won Manager of the Year, I think, didn't he, 2017?
I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, people are going to want him. He's going to be fine. This is why you have to outright ban them. Pete Rose would have found another job in baseball, 100%. I would love to have Pete Rose be the Dodgers hitting coach. I would love that.
Yeah.
He can't. And that's maybe a good thing. I don't know. This is, in my opinion, way worse than what Pete Rose ever did.
I think my biggest concern with this punishment is it doesn't punish the players who actually participated in the cheating in any way, shape, or form.
That actually brings us to the mailbox. A different what's in the box. We got Tony Martinez in San Francisco says, a lot of talk has been going around about the players not getting any punishment. Aside from potential realistic punishments, I'm curious to hear what the boys at West Coast Bias would have done. Ooh.
Well, I think you got
I have
to,
an idea.
I do have a couple ideas immediately. You know, short of tar and feathering them and parading them down every main street in America, I think you know, to hurt their pay in some way, I think would be fine. Give them
nothing for you.
Give them individual fines. I think also a ban similar to a player getting popped on a drug test. You cheat by taking a PED these days.
Wait,
you get suspended for 30 days.
No, how about you still get a play, but you don't get paid? How about that? Is that illegal? I don't know. Is it like OSHA going to get involved in that one? I don't know.
By paying them but finding them the amount of their salary.
Because, yeah, like, what's the point? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but obviously the players' union and all that stuff, they would have been dragged through the mud for years and years and years.
So now I know now this brings up a concern that will risk us getting off on a tangent, but this scandal and the punishment or lack thereof of the players, how will this affect the collective bargaining agreement coming up at the end of this year or the end of next?
2021, yeah. And that's also what I was thinking, too. So because Rob Manfred couldn't have just put out a draconian sort of punishment for all the players because the players union and all that stuff. He could have done a couple things, though, right? Because if players who use performance-enhancing drugs are disciplined for cheating, why aren't the players cheating in the Astros? And also, why shouldn't players cheat if they are impervious to punishment, right?
Right.
So now he could have done something like he could have issued a warning, say something like players will be penalized in the future if they engage in this type of behavior, something like that.
But
right?
That wasn't set in a the precedent. 9 pages.
No,
of
that was not in the 9-page report. They could have also been mandated to sign something like a best practices directive, you know, in which they vow to adhere to specific rules on sign stealing and perhaps other areas going forward. They could have done something like that. It's not going to affect them now. It's not going to affect them for past transgressions, but it's a clear statement to the future. He could have done that, and he didn't do that. Now, to answer the question from the mailbox, I've thought about this a lot, and I think, as penance, because, you know, pocketbook, whatever, blah, 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 the Astros players should each submit a detailed report of how often they used the sign stealing and to what extent they believe it helped their personal stats so fantasy players can get a better understanding of how this is going to affect them next year. I'm serious. This is not anything official. This is not anything, you know, they're not going to get dinged in the pocketbook. This is for the fans, because you're talking about, you know, yeah, we want to hurt the Astros. We don't want to hurt the Astros fans. Well, it's not just the Astros fans. It's fantasy players. And we are all over. We're all over the world. So where's Bregman going to go in this round? This is a very real concern of mine.
Yeah.
Springer, I mean, maybe the best leadoff guy in baseball. Like, where, how, what's the curve going to be? I want to know. If these guys just say, yeah, hey, look, like Springer's like, look, I used it like once or twice, but I really didn't really use it that often, and my numbers should be about the same as the projections. Or Altuve, yeah, sorry, I've been using it my whole career. Even the year I won MVP. Yeah, I've been using it my whole career, and you're going to see a huge down spike in my performance for fantasy. That's the least they could do. Now, that's my pie in the sky. That's my fantasy, if you will. Mm. That was bad. But, right? Because I have a lot of questions.
Well, yeah.
They have a
we
good
all
team.
Have a lot of...
They have an offensively... Bregman. I mean, we didn't even talk about Bregman. The guy was second in MVP. He almost won MVP.
Right.
Is he going to have the same numbers? Are his numbers going to be affected? I mean, this guy hits a lot of curveballs out of the park. What is he, just the luckiest guy in the world? Well, we know now. No, he's not.
He knew what
a lot
was
of
coming,
help.
Probably.
So, I don't know. For me, that's what I want. Now, hopefully, somebody out there, maybe Josh Reddick is listening to this or something, you know. Help me out, Josh, you boy. I mean, I'm not gonna draft you, but you know what I mean. Maybe in the later rounds, you never know. You never know. If he's batting fifth or sixth, maybe, you know. Might need a backup outfielder. Anyway. Yeah, I'm hot. I am pissed.
This is bad. This is bad for the game. This is bad for fantasy baseball purposes, as you said.
Oh, 100%. I mean, trust me, there's a lot. I'm not the only one. I mean, I know everybody listening is like, yeah, that's a great idea. Like, let's get that going.
I mean, yeah, I would like to know
the least they could do.
What they have to say about how often that it was actually used. And
kind of like what Clevenger was saying, like, these guys still get to walk around with those rings on their hands.
Oh, yeah.
These guys still get to go every day to their home ballpark and see that trophy.
And the difference is now everyone will also know what was done to be able to get that.
Yes and no. Yes and no. I mean, a little kid doesn't really understand all this stuff that's happening, and he's going to a Houston Astros game, and he gets to see that World Series trophy. No, I don't think that little kid should be able to see that World Series trophy. That's ridiculous. No, take it. Get it out of there. Take the hardware out. Now, at first when this came out, I was thinking, okay, that's silly. Like, you can't vacate the title. It's never been done. Can't do it. I mean, I'm not, but now I made a complete 180, because this is, I thought Manfred's report was going to be vague. It was not vague at all.
Man,
it's only 9 pages, but it is very detailed. Very detailed. This is a plague and a cancer throughout the entire organization. It's not just a handful of guys. It's not even just 8 men out, right? It's everybody. Don't give the World Series to the Dodgers. Don't give the pennant to the Yankees. You just vacate it. Nobody won it that year. It's as simple as that. Nobody won it in 94, right? There was a strike.
Right. Well, it wasn't even played.
That didn't happen, I know. But bottom line is, I know it's unprecedented generally in most professional sports, but not all. And obviously, the NCAA does it all the time. USC got theirs taken away. 2013,
football.
Louisville got their basketball title taken away. Reggie Bush had to give his Heisman Trophy back. Yeah. And, you know, okay, so people say, yeah, but not in professional sports. What about the Tour de France?
Yeah.
They do it all the time. All those guys get to keep all their stats because this is the thing that people talk about. Oh, well, you get rid of that, then those games don't matter. And what about the individual stats? No, all those things are fine. The individual stats matter. Those stay in the books. It's just that they don't get to fly that flag in their stadium. That's it.
Take down the flag.
It's very simple.
Lock away the trophy.
Yeah. Turn in your rings, boys. Sorry. Nope. No more. Yeah. You had a great season.
You had
the best record in baseball that year. Yeah. And that's another thing with the draft picks. I mean, these guys had the best record in baseball this year. They're going to be picking 30th anyway. And if they're good again this year, they'll pick me probably around the near the end next year anyway. So it's like, are the draft picks even really going to hurt them?
Well, but that remains to be seen how well they do, how many games they win if they don't know what pitch is coming.
Yeah. This is where these detailed reports for fantasy players comes in. Yeah. I wish. I'm just going to send an email to all
of them.
Are they
going to be, they're probably going to be more, they'll probably be closer to, who was it?
The Royals.
I was thinking in their own division, you know, probably
the A's. A's won 97 games last year,
right? But they weren't stealing signs, and they still might win 97 games this year. But they'll probably be in first place this year.
I hope so. Oh, I hope it's the Angels and the A's, and then you know, Astros somewhere down there. Hey, even the Rangers might be good this year. You know, they got a new park. There, that's about it. That's all I got. But you never know.
Complete with already built-in sign-stealing capabilities, right?
Yeah. Well, they are switching. We talked about that last time. They're switching the whole Statcast thing. Anyway, that's it. I know everybody's heard this a million times. I kind of apologize for rehashing it, but you know, I mean, this is it. This is what's going on right now.
It really is. What's going on is what you know. The whole world in baseball is talking about.
No.
And it is a shame because really should be talking about things like the upcoming.
Hold that thought before you get to that. That brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week.
Of course, we're not just going to give it to the Astros. We already did give it to the Astros. Won one for this particular thing. Yeah,
it's a little too easy. No, who's going to win the Ignoble Award this year? This year
went to...
Astros, hopefully they don't win it again this coming year. But that would be one Garrison Lassiter.
Garrison Lassiter, yes.
Is that name familiar to you?
Well, it is. This is the guy who this past season in 2019 sued the New York Yankees, or at least tried to sue the New York Yankees for a $34 million. Why did Garrison Lassiter have a suit against the New York Yankees? Well, he said that they protected one Derek Jeter, his career, and consequently Derek Jeter ruined his career.
Hoo-ah! He said that he was like there was like a conspiracy because Jeter was afraid to compete against him. That's what he said.
Right. So Garrison Lassiter, I couldn't find too much of his full stats, but this guy never made it past high A.
Right.
Had a career batting average of .244.
All right. Well, you know, that's Chris Davis territory. Okay.
By all accounts, he was okay at best, but overall a pretty terrible player.
Bring out the gimp.
After Lassiter's lawsuit against the Yankees was thrown out, he then sued the Cincinnati Reds for $1.635 million.
Yeah. Why did he sue the Reds?
and then he sued Prolific Park which is a North Carolina training complex owned by former NFL wide receiver Ricky Prohl. He said he filed the lawsuit because he did not receive an NFL tryout after working out at the facility. Works out once, doesn't get an NFL tryout. That's like a meme right there. While Lassiter believes he was held back by the Yankees, his former manager begs to differ. Aaron Ledesma, who managed Lassiter in high A ball, said Lassiter was, quote, okay offensively and, quote, below average overall. Oh, 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 oh. Well, you know what, Lassiter, I mean, you know, I guess good for trying. I don't know, bro. You're talking about a guy who's probably going to get a unanimous Hall of Fame vote this in a couple days on Tuesday.
Right.
I guess it's worth a shot. I don't know.
I think if he ruined your career, Garrison, he ruined a lot of potential Yankee shortstops careers. But, you know, over a 20-year span, that's bound to happen. But
you're a goddamn disgrace.
What are you going to do? Well, rats off to you there, Garrison.
I think most people are going to vote for Derek Jeter into the Hall of Fame, and Garrett Lassiter will never hear your name again.
That's probably true. The Hall of Fame is going to be interesting this year. There's a few, obviously, notable names that are nearing the end or are at the end of their eligibility.
Right. They are. Some.
Who do you want to see get into the Hall of Fame this year? Now, I feel like I kind of already know who you want
to
see.
I mean, there's a lot of good names on the list. You know, of course, Barry Bonds is the elephant on the list. I think Roger Clemens is in that territory too.
The Rocket needs to be in there.
Those two for sure, I think, should be in. PEDs or not, I think ultimately cheating by electronically stealing signs.
Well, no. Yeah, that's apples and oranges. That's steak and tofu. Okay, that's way different. Those are way obviously cheating in real time with sign stealing is with electronic sign stealing is 1,000 times worse than just being roided up. But I have a case.
Mean, well, sure, I know you do, but I mean, there's a few other names on this list that really
stand out. Scott
Rowland's
name is getting begin thrown around a lot.
Scott Rowland, I mean, yeah, I, you know,
does he deserve
people
it?
Like Andy Pennant, J.J. Putz,
Manny
Ramirez,
Manny should probably be in there.
You know, some interesting name, Curt Schilling.
Well, and that's the thing, Curt Schilling on paper, 100%. I mean, that guy. I mean, you think of some of the most incredible moments.
Oh, the bloody sock.
Bloody
There's
Sock,
no doubt.
But also 2001.
2001, absolutely. He and the two-headed monster with he and
in
Randy Johnson.
Yankee Stadium after
dominated.
9/11. Oh, my God.
They just dominated.
Oh, my God. Schilling is disgustingly good.
Alfonso Soriano was on the list this year, too.
Soriano, that's interesting.
He had more 30-30 seasons than Willie Mays.
Really?
Really.
Well, then, it's kind of like Jason Giambi, also. I mean, that's not really a guy that you think right off the bat, but...
And does he have the numbers? I mean, as compared to, you know, someone like Billy Wagner or Larry Walker?
He won MVP in 2000, Giambi did, and arguably 2001 was an even better finish. He had 9.2 WAR in that year. I don't know. I'm not making a case for Giambi.
Giambi was the PED user who admitted... apologized and got back on everyone's good graces.
Yeah.
Is that enough for him?
He's the opposite
to be
A-Rod.
Overlooked.
He's the anti-A-Rod. Yeah, and that's another thing with like Scott Rowland. You know, it's he has no black ink categories, meaning he didn't lead any category ever in his career offensively, but he has a WAR of 70.2 because his defense was stellar. And he is just one of seven players in MLB history to hit 300 home runs while accumulating at least 20 defensive wins above replacement. Now, you know, Rowland, for the people who played with him, they all think he should be kind of like a Dale Murphy. Dale Murphy isn't in the Hall, is he?
No, he's
and
not.
He probably should be.
Absolutely.
Because all the players that played with him all know. Now, let me just give you two triple slash lines, okay? And I want you to try to compare these two, because I'm going to make a case for somebody right now that I think really deserves to be in there. Okay, the first slash line, 280, 370, 538, with 136 OPS plus, 280, 370, 538. By all rights, a very, very good triple slash line. Now, number two, 313, 400, 565 with a 141 OPS plus.
Obviously it's better.
The second one is clearly better. Now, who do you think the first one is? First one's a Hall of Fame.
First one's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. That would be the first guy to get the unanimous vote, right? The most votes ever. Ken Griffey Jr. And by 100%, 1,000% deserves to be in the Hall.
Yeah, you're missing that from that slash line, though, the 600-some-odd home runs.
Right. but the OPS plus, which is park adjusted also and takes into account defense, is from a guy who also debuted in 1989, who was in his final year of Hall of Fame eligibility, at least by the writers. 313, 400, 565. That would be one Larry Walker. Larry Walker needs to be in the Hall.
Oh, absolutely.
Does
he go in as an Expo or a Rocky?
That's a good question.
How come he already, with these kind of numbers, how come he already isn't in
because
the Hall of Fame?
Of the optics, so to speak. I hate that term. But he played at, Coors Field for some of his career. Now, let me just break it down a little bit, okay?
You're going to get into some of the splits Coors Field and other things.
For right now, still against Griffey. So let's Griffey's road OPS. 860. Solid, right? Larry Walker's road OPS, 865. Again, his triple slash line blows it out of the water. Larry Walker played 30.3% of his games at Coors Field of his career. So it wasn't like it was even half. It wasn't even a third. Okay, so all right, but fine. Almost a third. Coors is also basically the hardest field to play in, coming in second in outfield area, first in balls in play, and first in BABIP. So he's always having a positive defensive score every year, year in, year out, and arguably the hardest park to do it. He also took home 7 gold gloves and 3 batting titles. He won an MVP. He stole 230 bases while only getting caught 76 times. Now that is huge right there. He had 100-plus RBIs in a season 5 different times. Had a 30-30 season in 97, has a 72.7 war. The average Hall of Famer has a 71.4 war. Derek Jeter, who we're just talking about, should be unanimous, only 72.4. He has a higher war than Derek Jeter, which is, again,
that's
including
totally
offense. Yeah. And get this, all right, this is the kicker. He's the only player in MLB history to have a 300 average, 400 OBP, 200 stolen base, and 350 home run career. Nobody in history has done that.
Wow.
That's it. He's in. I rest my case, Your Honor.
Welcome to the TED Talk.
I drink your milkshake.
Yeah, that's it. He's in, right?
How is
he not in?
I don't know.
Fucking Coors Field.
Rocky.
Fucking
yeah.
Coors Field, man. Because he's a Rocky. That was it.
I think that's right. Touché.
I just broke it down.
I'm not disagreeing with you. But, if I had to pick a reason why, it's because he's a Rocky.
Now pick a valid reason why.
I don't have one. I don't have one. Points. I totally agree with you. Larry Walker was so much fun to watch.
He was fun to watch.
I remember seeing him as an Expo coming to San Francisco. I remember him obviously coming to San Francisco as a Rocky. He was a great player. There's no doubt about it.
70% of his games were not at Coors Field.
Yeah. He spent a significant amount of time not at Coors Field.
Right.
And
more than double. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, that was it. Because this is the last year. And if he doesn't get inducted, I'm going to be really upset. Now, Curt Schilling, on the other hand, a little bit different, I guess, only because of his post-career antics.
But that shouldn't affect his Hall of Fame and what he did on the field. Yeah.
Well, and this is the question, and there have been countless articles written about this, why Schilling should not be in the Hall of Fame because of and again, the guy's probably a terrible person. I mean, by all rights, he sounds like a monster. But we're not talking about the Morality Hall of Fame. We're not talking about, do you want to hang out with this guy? We're talking about what did he do in the 18-year period when he was dominant.
There's only two pitchers who have more 300 strikeout seasons in their careers. And those two are, you know, Nolan Ryan and Randy Johnson. I believe they're in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, of course. Just like everybody, you know, ahead of Larry Walker or below him are in the Hall of Fame, I should say. Ahead of him, yeah.
15th all-time in strikeouts. Only one of five pitchers with at least 3,000 strikeouts and fewer than 1,000 walks. Guy was a phenomenal pitcher. There's no doubt about it. And he should definitely be in the Hall of Fame. What about a guy like Jeff Kent? How do you feel about Jeff Kent? He's one of the best offensive second baseman ever play the game.
That's true. When you're top five in your position of all time, yeah, I think you just right off the bat, I think probably. But Jeff Kent, I don't know. That's tough.
He benefited.
He's right on the cusp.
He definitely benefited from being in the same lineup as Barry Bonds. But no one's talking about another guy who did Rich Aurelia. He's not a Hall of Famer. He hit in front of both of these guys and benefited greatly, had some great seasons. But, you know, Jeff Kent, he was one of the best second basemen ever. And whether or not he spent a significant time not playing with Bonds as well and still put up very good numbers.
Yeah, even with the Dodgers. Yeah.
Even with the Dodgers, yeah.
I know. He's a career 290 hitter. You know, he's got over 1,500 RBIs. He doesn't have a lot of stolen bases, but I don't know. I mean, his WAR is right there at 55. We were talking about the average Hall of Famers is sitting at 70. Jeff Kent's tough. But again, when you're talking about maybe, well, is he a top five second baseman of all time? I guess he probably is. Yeah, no,
radio. He is. I don't have.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Subscribe to the podcast instead, please. Thank you, Homer.
That's tough. That's a tough one. See, I don't know. I'm not, when the baseball writers have to, well, they don't have to, but they usually write an article about why they chose who they chose. I know the guys at The Athletic did.
Right, but not every writer makes their ballot public. No, they also can vote for 10 people on this list.
Right.
Most of them don't, for whatever reason. They only vote for one or two, even if there are more than one or two that are worthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. all I want to see is Larry Walker. And honestly, I do want to see Roger Clemens, because Roger Clemens was insane. I mean, that guy was crazy. It was fun to be able to see him play. I mean, I got to see Nolan Ryan play a couple times, but
I think Roger Clemens, he also qualifies for guys that probably wouldn't want to hang out with otherwise, but he did great on the field.
Isn't he still pitching? I thought I saw him like in a Korean game or something. He still, it was like a seniors game or something, but still.
Certainly possible.
And he's still throwing like heat.
Oh, yeah. Him and Bartolo Colon team up and start a team.
Alrighty, that are we doing? Going back to trivia?
I think I don't have anything else to you.
I'm just, you know, I burned out my gas just getting all hyped up on the on the damn Astros, man. I swear.
The hypocrisy, well, the irony, and just overall.
Because, yeah.
Bad juju that is coming along with the fallout of this Manfred report. There's just like so much. Too much even to cover in one episode of this podcast.
Probably so. But, and without repeating something everybody else already said. But you made a good point, and that was that. Obviously, the Astros and the Red Sox have the ire of both coasts of this country. The Dodgers and the Yankees are, you know, writhing in pain and anger.
Right.
But you were even making a point, as a Giants fan, you're pissed because it delegitimizes the Dodgers' loss in 2017.
It does. And so it's like, I can't hold that over your head anymore.
You got that right.
Because I didn't really have like a fair shake at it.
Damn right.
And that really does hurt.
As if the American really League weren't playing by the same rules as it was, they had to go and create a whole new game. I just like Kershaw's quote. They just ask him. He just like shakes his head. He's like, "It sucks." he's like, "What do you want me to say, man?"
Well, I mean, you Darvish seems to have
a
good
6-run lead. Yeah,
like, you Darvish seems to have a little bit Darvish of a sense been, of humor about it.
Darvish has been getting a little crazy, hasn't he? He's just that guy is like that. Darvish is the kind of guy I feel like if you show him like the moon landing was fake. Like one documentary, he's just gonna believe it. He's just like,
it's possible.
I don't know. Maybe not. I would like to have a beer with Darvish, though.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Oh, yeah. Again, there never should have been a game 7. But anyway, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with that. That brings us to last week's trivia question.
Okay, remind us what it was.
Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. You know what? I'm gonna get an Instagram account going or something. I know we're so far behind the times. It's sad, and we supposedly have a Facebook account, but I don't know if you ever even update that ever. So I'm assuming you don't, based on the look on your face and the lack of movies that you apparently have not watched the last year. So that hopefully we'll try to get that up. Hopefully I say that. We'll see. Leave the answer on the Podomatic website, iTunes comments. You know how to do it. Last week's trivia question. Who was the first batter to strike out 200 times in a season? Simple. That's it. Who was the first guy to do it? Now it seems like it happens a lot, but nowadays. But who was the first?
It's a very good question. Did we get any right answers?
Oh, yeah. We got Miles P. in San Luis Obispo says, "It's got to be my favorite player of all time, Adam Dunn." Oh, big donkey. Ooh, well, that's a good guess.
Yeah,
Adam Dunn did have, and he's one of the podcast's favorite players as well. I mean, that guy's just, his stats are amazing, and super fun to go deep dive in. He did have 222 strikeouts in 2012, which is actually one off of the record, but he does not have that ignoble prize right there. So no, yes, he did do it, but he was not the first. We got Loretta Chavez in San Francisco says Chris Davis. Chris with a C. Now, that's actually, when we first thought of this question, that I was going to say Chris Davis because that's what I thought it was, because he was the first guy to like kind of make it popular. You know? No, but it was not Chris Davis with a C. It was, I mean, he's all over the single season strikeout record books. And he does have two seasons with over 200. But he's not the first to do it. Besides seasons with over 200, he has seasons with 192, 195, and 199.
I have a feeling that both of these players that have been guests so far, they're pretty current players.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah,
I have a feeling this player might be a little bit older, not currently playing.
I don't know if he's not currently playing. He might not have a team currently, but he has been playing up until very recently.
Okay.
Okay, we got one more. Mike B. in Sacramento says, Chris Carter. Ooh, not to be confused with X-Files fame, Chris Carter.
Right.
Chris Carter did have 212 strikeouts in 2012, but you got to go back a couple years to find the first. Yeah. So
when did it happen?
It happened in 2008.
2008, so not too far off from 11
years ago, 12 years ago, It wasn't too long. It was definitely recent memory,
Right.
I'm surprised
it... And it really is surprising that it was recent. This is... Yeah.
It seems like the kind of thing that everybody would know, kind of thing, right? But...
It isn't.
Like, we all know Reggie Jackson has a record. We all know that for his career, but... Even Reggie never had 200, so...
And he played for a long time, too.
Exactly. Who do you think? You got an answer for me? Because that's it. No winners.
I really no winners this week, and I'm not one either. I don't have an answer.
You got to give me something. Like give me a Ryan Howard or something. It's not Ryan Howard. Although he's up there. He's close. He's all over the top 20, kind of like Chris Davis. But no. Huh? Not the first. You give up?
I do.
That would be one Mark Reynolds in 2008. Yeah.
Wow.
Didn't he...
There was the almost first
win a batting title recently, like a couple years ago with the Rockies. Yeah,
I don't know. Coors Field, strikeout less there.
Well,
Houston, you strikeout less there.
Mark Reynolds, 2008. Yeah, he was playing with Arizona actually at the time. Yeah, first guy to do it with 204, and then after that he got 223, 211, 196. I mean, you know,
he strikes out a lot.
He strikes out a good amount. Yeah. Oh, no, I'm thinking of Michael Kadire. Is that who I'm thinking of?
I don't know. Is it?
Remember with the Rockies?
You're the one with sitting there with a laptop in front of you. So it's...
Mike. Yeah, was it a Kadire? Cuddy? It was like 2014 or something. Yeah, okay, 2013. He hit 331. All right, I'm not crazy.
Okay.
I knew it was a guy in Colorado uniform, but... And the guy's more or less equally obscure as Mark Reynolds. Anyway.
Sure.
I apologize, Mark Reynolds. You're not obscure. We love you here. We love your stat line. That's it.
I
got all my venting out. And all right. It's a new year.
You feel better now?
Yeah. I'll feel better once I get my baseball prospectus in the mail.
Well,
but,
sure.
Yeah. On that note,
our... This week's trivia question, the new trivia question.
Oh, that's right.
New trivia question.
Yeah, we need a new one, don't we?
So, Tony Gwynn is a great hitter. We've established this. He's a Hall of Famer. He's
pretty good hitter, yeah.
He didn't strike out a whole lot. In fact, there was only one pitcher ever to strike him out in a season more than... Well, in his career, I suppose. More than six times in his career.
Wait, in a season or a career?
In his career.
Wait. Say that again.
Only one pitcher to strike Tony Gwynn out more than six times ever.
Six or more than six?
More than six.
Only one guy.
Only
ever
one
done
guy
it.
More than six.
What?
Who was that pitcher to strike out Tony Gwynn more than six times?
Well, he's got
to
be in the West. Okay, wow, that's a good one. All Who's right. the only guy? To ever strike out. Now, of course, my brain goes immediately to something, but...
Probably should.
Interesting. Curt Schilling. No.
I don't know. I don't know if they played contemporarily enough for that to have happened.
Maybe. Maybe not. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
I am Samuel Paul. Remember, baseball is life. The rest... Just details.
Go watch some baseball.
Pitchers and catchers. 3 weeks.